Last time, on a very special episode of Blossom.
I want to refocus the podcast.
But Coach, my heart's just not in it anymore.
Well, what about the podcast?
Sure, that too.
What are you saying?
Maybe it's time for me to make a change.
What? Like, leave West Virginia?
I want to see the world. I want to see what it looks like without mountains. I'm finally going to use that football scholarship.
Oh. Gosh.
You guys are goofy.
Yeah, we are. Okay, and...
I want to get an Emmy for that one.
No, we're not.
Emmy for best live stream performance.
Okay, and cueing the music. Oh, well, I should have just, like, started talking instead of cut out the music. Thank you for listening to RGCWV, Random Geek Culture in West Virginia. I am your host, Luke Hersey. With me tonight is Mike Mallow.
Well, hello.
Alex McLean.
Hey, folks.
And Greg Phillips.
Hello.
How are you guys doing tonight?
Pretty good.
I'm hungry.
Oh, yeah, that's because you haven't had dinner yet because you're living in another time zone now.
It's not quite dinner yet, but it will be by the time we get done.
Right.
I'm going to shank somebody for a biscuit.
So you're living in Missouri? Missouri?
Rural Minnesota.
Minnesota.
You didn't know what state I moved to.
It's over. It's midway. It's before the mountains. I just remember that.
Before the mountains and after the river.
Right.
It's up a ways.
That's the directions to get there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Have you listened to The Stand or watched the series that's on CVS that I hear is not very good, actually.
I haven't started it yet.
Yeah, I mean, I loved the original, but I want to see it. It's just I'm not all that interested in CVS All Access, so
that's my problem.
Yeah, right. There's just so many darn streaming services nowadays. It's hard to keep up with all of them.
That's kind of like the one for Trekkies, and I'm not that.
Right.
Star Trek Discovery is awesome, but
yes, it is.
We shouldn't get off topic.
That's true.
So what is our topic tonight?
Let's see. Okay. So before we get any farther, I do want to talk about how we're reformatting the podcast. Basically what we're going to do going forward is rather than doing week to week or trying to keep up with that and then failing, we're going to do a month retrospective. It'll be a retrospective of the previous month. And so last month was December, so Christmas time, and there was some things to talk about in the world of
geekdom. So, first thing I wanted to talk about, and I know both all of you guys have a lot to say about this topic, but so obviously not last month, but the month before was the launch of the PS5. And the launch of the PS5, it was pretty successful. The problem was, and we started hearing about this in December, was scalpers. The cyber, cyber scalping is essentially what they called it. And we understand in the geek world, Alex, can you describe what a distributed attack is?
A distributed denial of service attack is whenever you have a script that hits a site from lots of different IP addresses. And this cyber scalping works in a similar way in that they have a script that goes out to these sites, buys the product, like, immediately, as soon as it becomes available, and you can't beat that. You know, a regular person can't get in that queue and beat these scripts that do this.
If you've ever tried to buy concert tickets, it's very similar, I imagine.
Yeah, that's a great example. So, these scripts, yeah, they work, in essentially the same way, and it made it impossible for Sony to sell something that they had worked so hard to create, and they were battling Xbox as well, and Xbox had their own problems as well with cyber scalpers, but it really hit hard on the PlayStation, and I think it really had to come down to marketing with what was really appealing to people. People were more driven to the PlayStation, especially because Xbox had announced that there wasn't going to be any exclusives for at least the first year, where Sony had some exclusives that were coming, and there was a few games that was immediately benefiting from the new hardware. For one thing, the new Miles Morales game, which I just finished on PlayStation 4, and it's fantastic, but I can only imagine how great it was on PS5 with ray tracing and everything else. I think they even put out a patch where it was 60 frames and ray tracing or something. It made it impossible for almost anybody to buy one. That wanted one that didn't like already have a pre-order. Now I know Greg, you got yourself a PlayStation 5, correct?
Yes.
And what games are you playing on it right now?
Oh goodness, I bought too many. I have too many I'm playing. I've got Demon Souls. I've got both of the Spider-Mans. I've got Assassin's Creed Valhalla, Call of Duty Cold War, what I'm forgetting the name of.
And how are you enjoying the console? Like, not the games themselves, but just the console.
To be honest, I'm underwhelmed at the moment. And I think it's because we haven't seen anything that will use its potential to make it stand miles ahead of the last generation. It looks better, yes, but I haven't been blown away yet. People are also on hype trains making bigger deals out of things than they are, like the controller. They're just swooning for the controller, and it is not as spectacular as they're making it out to be. It's just not. So there's a lot of hype right now, but I feel like there's more hype than actual results as far as the console's concerned. But again, I think that's because it just came out. Given more time, when there'll be more games that utilize more of it, then it'll stand out differently.
Now, thank you, Greg, for that. Now, one thing I did want to highlight was the scalping. I mean, we were talking about you know, why they made this appealing on different levels. It's just like computer viruses, where there's more viruses for Windows than there are for Macs, just because the market's there. There, it's appealing to take advantage of a bunch of Windows systems because it's a bigger pond, you know. And for the same thing of, you know, it was more appealing for cyber criminals to scalp the PlayStation 5 because, you know, the market was there. People were willing to pay $1,000, $2,000. I saw $5,000 for a friggin', you know, PlayStation 5, where, you know, just like Greg was saying just a second ago, it's not that big of a leap right now. I myself, I didn't even care about it. I mean, I do want one. Don't get me wrong. I want a PlayStation 5, but I don't need one now. I mean, I just finished Miles Morales on PlayStation 4, and I had a fantastic time about it. Quick little review on Miles Morales. As long as all of the previous DLCs put together, but the story is almost as good as the original Spider-Man. I mean, it's shorter, obviously, but it's got a really good, impactful ending. So I really liked it, but neither here nor there.
Yeah, there's no game out right now that I just have to have. You know,
right.
Whenever Horizon Zero Dawn 2 comes out, then I'm going to be looking for a PlayStation 5, you know?
But they're already talking about it coming out on PlayStation 4.
No, I want to play them. I want to play them on the new console.
I'm going to agree with that. Second.
So now... A lot of people have probably already thought, you know, well, why does Sony really care? You know, why do they care if these systems are getting scalped when, you know, their systems are selling anyway, so they're getting their money? The problem is that a lot of people don't consider that Sony isn't just a hardware developer. They're an e-commerce model. They are selling a platform that has a store that they want you to buy games on. And the less people that have their system, the less money they make. Because truthfully, the PlayStation 5, they were taking a loss on. Just like with the Xbox, they were taking a loss on. But go ahead.
That's common. They want to get the platform out to as many people as they can so they can sell as many games as they can. That's
where the real money is. Money.
That's where the real money is. So
and they're all locked up in a scalper's basement. Well, those aren't owned by people, you know.
Doesn't Sony own the trade or the patent for Blu-ray anyways? So any disc that's sold too is money in their pocket in both ways.
Right, I forgot about that. Mm-hmm. Now remind me, just a quick segue, remind me, HD DVD was not owned by Microsoft.
I'm not sure. My first instinct is that it was, but I can't remember for sure. I was actually trying to think of that before I made that comment.
I think it was, because the Xbox ran it.
Yeah.
And I think that's what their games were until Blu-ray ever took them.
Alex, you're already looking it up, aren't you?
Yep.
Thank you.
I thought about doing that, but I was being lazy.
Yeah. You can always depend on Alex to do the research. I mean, shoot, as system admins, that's like what would you say, Alex? 80% of our job?
Yeah, looking stuff up.
Yeah. So anyway,
they got into a pretty good war back in the early 2000s.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. I mean, the only reason that in my opinion, the only reason that the Blu-ray won over HD DVD wasn't because of size or throughput or anything. It was because they made it so that there was a promotion where if you bought a PlayStation, what was it, 3? I think it was a 3, that you got 3 Blu-ray DVD or Blu-rays with it, bundled with it. You got them for free.
My friend Matt was working at Walmart when they were doing that promotion, and they weren't selling a whole lot of PlayStations, and then they came out with that promotion, and it pretty much just sold both of their markets at once. It was like one of the best business decisions they ever made, and it solidified them into the finishing out the PlayStation 3 generation and carried them into the 4. But
looking here, HD DVD patented by Toshiba.
Ah. Okay.
All
right.
I guess Microsoft adopted it for the Xbox platform, though.
Now, I did hear that falling
down that rabbit hole.
Yeah, I did hear that that a lot of retailers are starting to crack down on these e-scalpers, protecting themselves in the same way that a DDoS would be that you would protect against a DDoS attack. In the IT world, we've seen these things happen 100 times, and it just took something as big as this to really wake up these retailers. IT is reactive. It's not proactive. So it's whatever. It's neither here nor there. I'm just glad that they're starting to do something about it, and maybe going forward in the PlayStation 6, we'll be able to go and get one. Hopefully we won't have to, or we'll actually be able to go to the store, though. Because, man, wasn't 2020 just compacting everything, even as far as just like going to buy a friggin' PlayStation 5? Now, Greg, yeah,
they wouldn't even sell them in the stores at first. You had to buy them online. It was the only option.
Now, Greg, you bought yours. Did you buy yours in store, or did you have it mailed to your house?
I had it mailed to the house. I actually landed it the first day it went live, but I had to fight on multiple websites to get it, and just went with whatever website went through first. Same thing with my Xbox. I got it the day it landed, but I had to fight with multiple websites till one went through. Wow. And it just so happened that I was in a position where I was sitting in an archive room, and I could sit there and keep tabs on my phone while I worked, or I wouldn't have been able to do it. But had to fight with multiple websites, just keep refreshing them till one of them went through.
Now, my buddy Josh, he actually did go into the store when GameStop opened it up at a couple locations. He went to go get one, and the day that it launched, he just went to the store, picked it up. They brought it to his car. He's just called him up. Hey, I'm here.
Nice.
So that's pretty cool. You know, that some people that wanted it did get it. And I hope that these problems won't be something that happens in the future. So next topic. We've all heard about the big story in gaming news, but I'd like to preface the big debacle in gaming news with something else. This summer, a fantastic game came out. Out of left field, nobody knew how big it was going to be. I'm talking, of course, about Ghost of Tsushima. That game, me and Alex talk a lot about S-rank things. You know, there's B and A rank, there's games that fail, and even not even just games, but media pieces. This game is S-rank. It transcends someone who doesn't normally play video games. If they were like, hey, I've got a PlayStation 4 or I got a PlayStation 5 and I'm looking for an adventure game, what should I play? That would be my first suggestion every time. Now, Horizon Zero Dawn's great, but it's not for everybody.
Yeah.
I would put that in A rank. I'm sorry, Mike. I'm sorry.
A-rank, to clarify, means like great. You really, know, like really 100% fantastic. Great. S-rank is like 110% great.
Right. And that's where I would put Ghost of Tsushima. And Ghost of Tsushima, even though they didn't win anything at the Game Awards, they still won People's Choice. And I really like that they won People's Choice, because that just shows me that I'm not alone in loving this game, but I'm also that the developer is told that we as gamers loved this game. Fast forward to December, when the Game Awards were, another game came out. Actually came out in the end of November, but the debacle, the controversy really started hitting in December. And that was, of course, Cyberpunk. I myself got Cyberpunk for PlayStation 4. I played all the way through the main story on my PlayStation 4. I got done, and I realized that they will never fix that game for PlayStation 4. No matter how much they complain and say that they're going to have it ready for the old systems, it's terrible. It's terrible on PlayStation 4. Yes, I played it. I came to the realization with this game and with Fallout 76 that I like bad games.
To be fair, they fixed Fallout 76.
Okay. Letterkenny reference. That there is a lot of potential in Cyberpunk, but the developer has really, really dropped the ball on this. Now, Greg, you have it on PlayStation 5. What's your experience been?
Not good. It doesn't run. It has a lot of problems on PlayStation 5. It's very prone to crashing. There are certain things, if you do them, it'll crash every time, like photo mode. About every time I do photo mode, it crashes. It crashes a lot outdoors. not as much indoors, but you'll just be driving around town and it's gone. And it's pretty sad. And that's after you turn off a lot of the settings, because people learn that it runs better on PlayStation 5 if you turn down all the settings, which you shouldn't have to because it's a PlayStation 5, but it does run better if you do. Same thing on the Series X. I watched a friend stream it on the Series X, and it ran better than the PlayStation 5, but it still had issues. They still had to tweak it, and it still crashed. And it really shouldn't be crashing on the new consoles at all.
I don't know what you guys are talking about. I have it on PC, and it runs, you know, I don't have a new video card. Oh, God, I want a video card. But, I mean, even on my old video card, it makes 30 frames a second, and I haven't had significant problems. I've had a few missions kind of bug out on me and stuff, and I have to reload my save, but I'm loving the game. Like, it's it delivers what I expected from it. There's some things that I wish it would be that it isn't, but I mean, other than that, it's the story, the characters, just the weirdness. I think something about a cyberpunk setting needs to be weird, and it meets that most of the time. The look, everything about it, it's a pretty good game.
Now back to my story. I'm piggybacking off of.
I planned this out. Okay, piggybacking off of yours.
So I returned my copy because PlayStation's policy on Cyberpunk was anybody could return it. So I returned it. Remember, I beat it on my PlayStation. I returned it.
You wore that dress to the party, then you took it back.
Right.
That's it.
Right.
Yeah.
So I returned, a prom dress, Luke. I returned it, but then I bought it for my PC. Now, little history about my PC. It's mid-range at best, last generation. I have for those technical people out there, I have an RX 570 8 gig model, and I have a FX Black, AMD FX Black 6350. By the specifications of CDPR, I shouldn't be able to run it. One of the things I did was me and Alex have you know, gone back and forth with different mods that, you know, makes this game better. But one of the things that I did was I removed all anti-aliasing, which is the smoothing effect, to make a jagged line look straighter. I removed all anti-aliasing within the engine, the game engine itself, and then I applied anti-aliasing within the actual video card. What this is doing is taking load off of the game engine, which is horribly programmed, and putting it onto my video card because it's got eight gigs of RAM. It's got lots of video RAM room to run something like that. Again, I've got a mid-ranged last-gen PC, and I'm getting 45 frames. It's running fantastic on there. It looks great. And it just on that thing alone just makes me think that the game engine is horrible. Absolutely horrendous. I was reading an article today. It was on the expose that Bloomberg did on Cyberpunk. And apparently, one of the developers was telling him that if, like, say, a shadow wasn't showing up, instead of the team working together, because they really crunched, they said that there wasn't going to be crunch, but they really crunched this last year in 2020 with remote and everything, and they said that if there was, like, a shadow that wasn't showing up, rather than hit up the other members of the team because they were busy and they weren't meeting together, they would just create a new API, a new application interface. And that shader technology might have already been in the engine. That's just one little teeny example of how many things that are not optimized within this game engine. And that's the core of the problem with this game, is the engine itself. I just read the other day that they didn't even start actual serious development until 3 years ago. For a game as big as this, working on this for only 3 years is horrible. Absolutely despicable. Thoughts, guys? I feel like I'm the only one talking about how, and that's the thing. I sound infuriated, but I love the game. I put 30 hours on my PlayStation with the main story, and now I put another 50 hours on my PC. I obviously like the game.
Honestly, I was waiting for it to come out on PS5 before I bought it. So, well, I was waiting to get a PS5. So I haven't ventured into it yet. I'm in no hurry to get PS5, basically.
It's not that I don't like it. It's just, it's so frustrating to play and have it not work as much as it does. I've put it aside. I may not play it for months until they release the PS5 update.
Right.
You know, I hope that this will trigger some kind of a change in just workplace culture of these companies about crunch and about, like, verification, validation, quality control, testing, stuff like that. I hope that this game's state makes future productions have a lot more emphasis on quality control. Because these were known. They knew this on release day. You know,
I mean, I'm glad you suggested, or you brought that up, Alex, too, because they, as far as Sony,
doing the refunds and everything, a reporter asked them why this game was released on the PlayStation Store, and Sony just simply responded, "We trusted them.
We just thought that they came out with Witcher, and that's the problem." Just like Bethesda, they came out with Fallout 4, they came out with Skyrim, we just trusted them for 76, and it wasn't ready on launch. Just like this one wasn't. Just like Anthem wasn't, Greg.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't. That was the most suffering I ever went through on a launch. And the most frustrated I ever was. It was so horrible. It was unplayable.
And you know, I say that I hope this makes the gaming industry learn something, but there have been many examples prior, but this was a pretty high profile thing. I mean, like across the board refunds, that never happens.
Especially physical. That was the real shocker, was the physical refunds.
Right. The physical, that was...
Like, these were basically no questions asked refunds. So, yeah, we were talking about just Cyberpunk and what effect this might have on the gaming industry. I say that I hope there's a change, but we've seen so many examples of them learn nothing from mistakes.
Right. And I'm really worried that I'm worried of the statistic that just recently came out, which was Cyberpunk is the most successful RPG launch of all time now, even after Returns. They've made more money off of Cyberpunk than any other RPG game on launch. How do you even?
That's what normalizes this.
Yeah.
Well, here's the question, though.
I know their stock price fell off a cliff.
Yeah, their shareholders are suing them, and the Polish government may be going after them.
Wow.
I would almost consider
if it wasn't a foreign stock, I'd consider putting a limit order in or something like that. Because like it's CD Projekt Red, they'll come back.
Yeah. So the concern that I have is, you know, we've had a lot of A+ games do this to us recently, and you know the industry is a lot bigger than it used to be, but also, you know, the Atari died with ET. So this has been a historic issue, I guess. You know, and it wasn't just ET. You know, a lot of Atari games were bad by, you know, 1981 standards, bad.
Right.
But what's it going to take for the industry to end up back in that territory where it's falling because people are making bad stuff?
Well, the thing we have to consider, though, is we're only talking about one subset of the industry. Because just look at Nintendo. Nintendo's market is growing. It's one of the largest companies now. In fact, it outsold Xbox and PlayStation for hardware on the month and the month after the PlayStation and Xbox launched.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge statistic. So what I'm trying to say is maybe we shouldn't be looking at this as the gaming industry is failing altogether. It's that the gaming industry is starting to have, you know, actual hard discernible subsets. Just like with action movies in the 80s and 90s, they took a big fall in the late 90s because everybody was just tired of them. And then now comedy movies. There's not as many comedy movies as there was in the early 2000s. And I think what I'm trying to say is that there's certain parts of the gaming industry that are failing, but will have a reinvigorated.
Right. I don't think it's fair to compare like the gaming crash of the 80s with Atari and everything, because it wasn't that big of an industry back then. Now
that's kind of what I'm saying too.
Big industry. Yeah.
But you also have a lot more major failures like this too.
Yeah.
And I'm you still have Nintendo. Nintendo is who pulled it out of the sewer back in the 80s.
Uh-huh.
They had their seal of quality, which I don't think they still do the seal of quality thing, but I think they still make their games by that standard or
release
games. Yeah.
I mean, I've read about their quality control and it's a big deal there.
And there's a reason for that.
Yeah. I can't remember the last Nintendo game I bought that was bad when it came out.
Right.
I can't remember that.
Right.
And they're always looking to improve because they were up high with the Wii and then they thought the Wii U was going to be good and it went. So then they invented the Switch, and now they're going to surpass the Wii at this point.
I mean, I have the Nintendo stock. I've bought into the Nintendo stock because they just keep going up.
Yeah,
yeah.
Nintendo and Disney. I just two solid investments.
A tangent about Nintendo. I fully expect their next console is going to have an obtuse and like confusing name. And I think it's going to be the Swish. The next Nintendo console will be the Nintendo Swish. Nintendo's source of their success, I believe, is quality control. And these other companies that are having big problems stems from a lack of quality control. But
like Cyberpunk.
As Luke was saying, Cyberpunk was not a financial failure. So what really is the consequence of poor quality control?
As long as they're in the black, I don't know if they'll stop doing it.
That's the thing. Are right. they still going to be in the black if they end up with all these legal issues? Because yes, they had big profits, but if they're going to lose those profits with legality, then it's not a business success.
Well, no, another way they could look at it was if they had done it right, and there had been all those refunds, how much more money would they have made? Because there was a lot of refunds.
True.
I was one of them.
Yeah.
Of course, I bought it. I bought it on another platform. Because that's the thing. The bones are there in the game. It's just, you know, it's...
They may fix it eventually. It may take them a while. Other games that have started out really bad, some of them are good now, but it took months to a year before there was really good success.
No Man's Sky.
Yeah, it's awesome now.
Yeah, it's great.
I have the PS5 update for it. Oh, I love it. It's fantastic.
I haven't played it since its first year.
Yeah, no, I played it here in like February,
and I liked it. I put like 30.
Fantastic. I remember when it wasn't fantastic.
I've always liked it, to be honest.
So now that we've talked about Cyberpunk, I think we've
gone as far as we can with that. So let's move on to our last topic for the night, and that's Universal Studios' decision to release every single movie be slated for 2021 on HBO Max.
Was it Universal or Warner Brothers?
Warner Brothers.
It's
Warner Brothers.
Yeah. Okay. Because Warner Brothers owns HBO.
I thought it was Universal as well.
I don't know if Universal did or not. I know Warner Brothers is.
Okay.
Although they had to rework some of that policy with some of their partners, like for King Kong Godzilla, because their partners got mad at them over it.
Right.
That makes sense. That's probably Universal, I think. I don't know.
I don't know what to think about this. I mean, there is, I mean, I fear that this is going to hurt theaters, that theaters are going to close from this. However, there is another point that a lot of people might be missing from it. That Chris Stuckman brought up on his YouTube series. Fantastic reviewer. If you haven't seen any of Chris Stuckman's stuff, he's really good. He reviews movies from a film production standpoint. Very, very good guy. Anyway, his point was, I love this is him, and I'm paraphrasing. I love the movie theater experience. And when I have Joe Schmo over here on his phone the whole time, and I have a kid screaming in my ear on the other side, how much am I actually enjoying that theater experience? If they're going to do the same movie at home streaming, where Joe Schmo can, you know, have it playing on the back in the background while he's scrolling around in his phone, and the kid is screaming back at the house watching Disney movies while his parents are actually watching the movie, then what's the harm to him? And I get his point that moviegoers, actual people that want to see these movies in the theater, that they might benefit from this. But the problem is how many of these theaters are actually going to stay open? Go ahead.
Short answer, a lot of them have already closed. I'm not sure if you're aware, quick sidebar, the theater in Harrisonburg closed, Regal.
I heard about that.
Yeah, they couldn't pay the lease anymore, so the building owners just dropped them entirely. And the theater where I live now was closed when we moved here and is for sale, to the point where I'm considering buying it in the future because, you know, I think things will bounce back eventually. You know, it may be a hybrid market in 2 years or so. And it, honestly, it probably needed to be a hybrid market. You know, there's too many forces working to keep theaters open when they probably didn't deserve it that much.
Now, that theater out there in Minnesota. Okay. I was making sure I still had it right. Misery out in Minnesota, that one, does it have a retractable screen so that it could do live performances?
It actually has a stage in front of the screen. The screen itself doesn't retract, but it appears there's a stage in front of it for live performances should they wish to do that instead of movies. You know, that said, they still, you can't have a lot of people in a room together, which, you know, is the bigger issue of everything right now.
Yeah, but still,
I think for a long time now, if movies hadn't committed to like a delay for the home release, like that would already, you know, for years now, that would kill movie theaters. That would severely reduce their attendance if the movie came out on home and in the theater on the same day. That's why they didn't do it. That's why there was a delay to get people to go to the movie theater.
Right. And yeah, and there's no reason to change it, but now there's a reason. And people have seen that it's better this way for the most part. And I think once things bounce back, they won't come back to where they were, but I think they'll find reasons for them to get butts in seats again.
Right. I think the point that Luke was trying to make was that, like, maybe going forward when the theater opens back up, people were going to think, you know what? Screw the theater. Like, I kind of hated going there anyway. I like staying home watching movies anyway.
And there'll be a lot of people like that. And, you know, and that'll help with the quality of movie, too, because there's certain movies where I'd be like, I want to see it, but I don't want to go to the theater to see it. And, you know, that doesn't push me towards going to the theater. if I don't want to see it in the theater, I won't see it in the theater.
Yeah, and I mean, my standpoint has always been, am I going to feel like I missed something if I didn't see it in the theater? Perfect example is Blade Runner 2049. Phenomenal movie in the theater. Phenomenal movie. Just the sounds and the big screen and it's big, and it was fantastic. I mean, I'm a big Blade Runner fan, so I mean,
one of my great regrets is not seeing Avatar in 3D in the theater. I watched it at home, and everybody that went said like it was an amazing theater experience. I thought it was a really mediocre movie.
That and Gravity both were movies that had to be seen in a theater. Yep. Like, cause I've seen them elsewhere, and like somebody bought me Avatar for Christmas after it came out, and I to this day it's still in its wrapping.
I love the movie theater experience, and there's movies that I have watched in the theater that there's no point not watching them in the theater. You watch them in the theater, you get the theater experience. It's fantastic, even if it's in 2D. You come home, and it's just not the same. I've got a 55-inch NanoCell TV with 5.1 surround sound. It still doesn't compare. It's still not the same thing. Especially the big screen. I watched Nightmare Before Christmas 100 times on TV. Went to the theater to see it because I'd never seen it in the theater before, and then just realized that Zero's nose was a pumpkin, was a jack-o'-lantern. Because it had never been big enough for me to see that it was a jack-o'-lantern until I saw it in the movie theater.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
I'm looking this up.
So, I have seen a million times in at home Monty Python and the Holy Grail, and the first time my daughter Bella got to see it, we went to go see it in IMAX. And
that would have been great.
It was great. It was fantastic. Bella was quoting it for a month.
That's hilarious.
I recently went to go see in the theater with Bella's best friend's family. We all went to go. We rented out a theater to go see Elf. It was $100, and there was nine of us, I think. So I mean the math works out. And it was fantastic. And the best thing about it was because we were the only ones in the theater at the very end. When they're making Santa's sleigh rise with the Christmas carols, we were all singing along with it. It was great.
And I'm wondering if private showings are going to become more common now, even after COVID. And I also wonder if the hybrid experience is going to become a bigger deal. Because with Wonder Woman, it was successful at home and it was successful in the theater. They made money on both ends. It wasn't just at home. It wasn't just the theater. It actually ended up being successful both ways.
Did it deserve it? Because you're the only one that saw it.
I've seen it.
Some of the hate it's getting, I feel, is because there were people on HBO Max that watched it because they already had HBO Max, are not big fans, sit at home and watched it just because they had it. And they had the ability to pause it and rewind it and find every little single problem they possibly could with it, down to a video game in the arcade not having been out until the next year, or someone on their Walkman in the background looks like they're on an iPhone. Like, they got real nitpicky with their criticisms of this movie.
I hate that.
Yeah, and they would not have done it if they weren't sitting at home with a remote controller. They would not have been as big on this if they either one, they wouldn't have watched it in the theater to begin with because they weren't a fan, or two, they just wouldn't have sat there and been so critical if they hadn't had a controller to pause and wind. And so I think it's getting a little bit more hate than it deserves. I thought it was enjoyable. It's not the best superhero movie I've ever seen, but I enjoyed myself. I liked it. Some some parts of it were better than the first movie. Like the ending to the first movie for me, where she was fighting Hades, was way too long. Yeah. But the final fights in this one was better. It was a better final fight.
Oh, okay.
And overall, the action was pretty good in this one. Some people complained that, you know, Cheetah was underdeveloped, but I think that they forget, if you watch superhero movies, sometimes the characters are underdeveloped because they assume you know who it is. She wasn't very well developed, though. She was kind of one-dimensional. The nobody likes me, but I'm a sweetheart, but I'm not popular, and I want to be popular, so I wish for it, and now I'm wonderful, but I'm a horrible person.
Who was Cheetah?
Oh, you forgot.
Kristen Wiig.
Kristen Wiig, yeah. She did a really good job, too.
That's the part she plays, though. That's the part she plays in every single movie. She plays the, I'm great, nobody likes me.
But,
When
she became Cheetah and she had to look more glamorous and tougher, she did a really good job with the transition between the nerdy woman with glasses to the glamour, because she basically was trying to emulate Diana. That's who she was trying to be. So she did a real good job crossing between the two. There wasn't a lot of development in some areas, but again, I mean, it's like you watch Batman and they don't develop Batman with this because they assume, you know, that his parents got shot and he's Batman. Like they don't always do that. Yeah. They don't always develop superhero characters very well because they assume you're at least somewhat familiar with this person.
That was the one thing that I appreciated about the reboot of Superman is they didn't spend a lot of time on his backstory because
everybody knows.
Yeah, everybody knows. It's Superman.
I
kind of
hate it whenever movies dwell on that too much. Like the Fantastic Four movies, all of them, they always do that. Like 2/3 of the movie is the origin story. I don't care. I know who the Fantastic Four are. Just get on with it.
Now, I will say the most recent Fantastic Four had a very good origin. It just didn't have a middle. It had an origin story and then a climax, and that was it. There was no middle to that movie.
Spider-Man,
they need to stop making Fantastic Four movies. I swear they're never going to make a good one. I'm always like, Fantastic Four. Oh,
it seems like a hard formula to get wrong.
It does.
They can make good trailers, at least. That's about it.
They do make good trailers.
Well,
Silver Surfer and,
Whenever you change mediums, you change the original intent of the media piece. And Fantastic Four is only good in comics. It just doesn't make good theater, good movies. Just doesn't. Now, John Krasinski as Mr. Fantastic? You know, maybe. And who's his wife that they're talking about having his wife in real life, John Krasinski's wife in real life. She was in Scario.
Yeah, I can't think of her name either. She was in Day After Tomorrow.
Yes.
But I cannot think of her name right now.
But anyway, what were you going to say about her?
Oh, well, they're talking about making a Fantastic Four movie with John Krasinski and his wife, and then I don't think the other two characters they have really pegged down yet.
Well, for heaven's sake, don't make the movie 2/3 setup. Okay? Just it out. Scene one, the Fantastic Four. They go on about doing their thing.
They should do, this is, okay, we're going on a segue, but what they should do, and I've been cooking on this for a while.
It was Emily Blunt, by the way.
Thank you, Emily Blunt. Thank you.
And there was Edge of Tomorrow. I said Day After Tomorrow.
Whatever. I knew what you were talking about.
One of those tomorrows.
Yeah, one of those Tom Cruise throwaway movies. I'm sorry. The guy was good in like two movies, and
it was a Halo Groundhog Day movie. It's all right.
Yeah, it was a
We're anyway, getting off topic here.
Anyway. What I think they should do for Fantastic Four to bring it into the MCU is they should do the same thing that they did with Ant-Man, which is it is a sub-story that we didn't get when the snap was reversed. Okay? So what they do is they rope it in to they were trying to figure out how to bring people back from the snap apart from Tony Stark and apart. So there's not a big setup. There's not a big, you know, like origin story. It's just, they're a science team. There's a 4-person science team and they're trying to figure out the snap. And because they did it, they did their experiment at the exact same time as the snap. They were sent to another dimension, which is exactly what happened in Fantastic Four. And they come back and they got powers.
And then that also introduces kind of like people getting powers from coming back from the snap. And then you can throw in the X-Men.
Simple explanation.
That was a long way to say that we should do X-Men again.
But you got there, and that's the important thing.
Yeah.
You arrived at your destination.
So, anyway, I think we're all in agreement that, Warner Brothers putting all their stuff on HBO Max is going to hurt theaters, but theaters need to adjust anyway.
Exactly.
We knew at the beginning of the pandemic that, like, a lot of businesses, we're going to lose a lot of businesses. We already have, you know, the Black Bear in Morgantown, a tragedy. But, we knew this from the start. On the other hand, like, I'm sure the scribe hated the printing press that some things get outmoded by newer technologies or
Kodak
changed in format, you know, and things change, and
that's just the nature of the world.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah,
I want to see how maybe King Kong and Godzilla do, because that's going to be another hybrid. That's going to be another theater and home release at the same time. So I'm waiting to see how that one
Matrix 4
pulls it off.
Matrix 4.
Which I really hope I get to see in the theater.
Dune. Yeah. Oh my God. I really hope that I can go see that in the theater. I mean, shoot, I was even looking at renting out a theater for Dune.
I remember.
Yeah.
Maybe you still can when it comes out.
I was actually talking with Regal Cinema, like events coordinators, you know, about. So,
gotta get your Doom on.
By the time it comes out, they may be desperate to rent you a theater.
I
get it for cheap then.
Yeah. Dune is one of my favorite. Like, there was Lord of the Rings and there was Dune. Back in my high school, those were the two sci-fi things that I was really like, yeah. And
things.
Yeah. But anyway, I think we've touched on our topics, and with the new format, we're going to do geek outs like we're doing the before in the previous season in seasons before, but we're going to do them at the end because we want
to give
you guys what you came for when you start. So, who's gonna start? Mike, you said you already had one.
Yeah, I got one.
Okay.
And it kind of segues well because it's about HBO Max.
Oh, okay.
So I got HBO Max. Of course, you know, we talked about Wonder Woman and all that. But I had been criminally behind on watching any Studio Ghibli movies ever. And HBO Max has I don't think they have the whole library, but they got Miyazaki's greatest hits. So
like Princess Mononoke and
in Howl's Moving Castle.
Yeah, Spirited Away, My Neighbor Totoro. We and I've been basically every Saturday I've been watching one with my daughter, and I do appreciate them.
Which one is Hazel's favorite?
I actually think she liked Princess Mononoke the best.
That one's fantastic. That is my favorite.
It was a little more violent than the other ones, but she was down for it. The other, she really liked Spirit. Totoro. She really liked. That was the other one.
Spirited Away is Bella's favorite, but I think it might be because that was her first Annie in the theater.
But the one thing I thought was interesting, and me and Hazel both made two observations watching Princess Mononoke. Her first thing she said it was a lot like Breath of the Wild, which in doing research later on, like some of the art early on was kind of like that. And I actually read a thing like that night that was like, yeah, they took some of their inspirations from that movie. And the thing that I noticed was, I got to a point where I was like, well, this seems very similar to the plot of the Ahsoka episode of The Mandalorian, where she's trying to get into the fortress.
And, okay.
I did some reading on that later, and it turns out that Princess Mononoke was Dave Filoni's inspiration for Ahsoka.
That's cool.
And the markings on their faces are very similar too. So I thought that was a neat little thing.
That I never knew that.
That is neat.
Yep. So there's a fun little nugget of trivia for you.
All right, Greg, you got one?
Well, I have so much right now because I'm playing so many games, but I would have to say one of the things that I'm really enjoying the most right now is Xbox Game Pass Ultimate. I get hundreds of games, including brand new releases for next gen when they come out on the Xbox. I get PC games to play. I get free games to keep. It comes with Xbox Gold, so I can play online. And it has xCloud, which right now is on phones but is and tablets, but is going to spread to more devices. I actually have an Xbox controller that I can mount my phone to. The first game I played was Halo. And it syncs with the console. So where I stopped playing the game on console and paused it on the console, I get on my phone, that's where I start playing. Where I stop playing on the phone, I go back to the console, that's where I start playing.
That's really cool.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, and you can right now you can get it on the cards on sale. I've already bought multiple months because you can get the cards on sale to where you're paying less than $15 a month for it. And you're getting discounts, you're getting Xbox Gold Live, which you're getting those discounts and those free games that come with that. You're getting hundreds of Xbox games to play, including next-gen ones. That's how I played No Man's Sky next-gen on both consoles, so I could compare them to see how the weaker S compared to the PlayStation 5 at the same time.
Is that how you're playing Fallout 76 on?
That is how I'm playing it on Xbox. That's why I'm playing it on Xbox.
So you have it on three platforms now.
And ESO. Nice. I have ESO on three platforms too.
That's funny.
But the Xbox Series S runs 76 better than the PlayStation 5 does. But that's I think that's something with the PlayStation, because the PlayStation 4 had the same issues that the PlayStation 5's having with the game.
It's so probably running an emulated mode to like a lot of the games.
And that's the other thing about Xbox Game Pass. If you do like older games, they don't just have the next gen and the last gen games. It goes all the way back to the 360. There may be some Xbox One games on there, but I know it goes all the way, because you can play New Vegas on it. Because that's a lot of people's favorite Fallout. Yeah. You can play that on the Game Pass. It's on there. And it's actually...
Like the first Fallout?
Nope. New Vegas was after 3.
And you can go all the way back to, you can go all the way back to Xbox One because you can play Morrowind. But one thing that they've done, and I think this may be how they're getting some of these people on board to put their games on there, is I've played games on Xbox Game Pass. The game goes on sale, I buy the game because I've already played it. I wouldn't have bought the game if I hadn't already played it, because I wouldn't have known that I liked it. I'd had no reason to know that I wanted it. The other big one is they scooped up EA Play. You get EA Play with it too.
I heard about that.
Yeah, so you get Dragon Age, Mass Effect, Jedi Fallen Order. You get all that too. And then you consider how much EA Play costs by itself, how much Xbox Gold Live costs by itself, how much other gaming streaming services cost by themselves, and you're getting everything for $15 a month. I absolutely love it.
That ain't bad.
All right. I mean, I have the PlayStation Now, and I really like it. You were talking about the thing where you can mount your phone to your Xbox. Actually have something that I can mount my phone to my PlayStation controller, so PlayStation remote.
I have PlayStation Now, and they're going to have to give you more than just games to be able to compete, I think.
Right.
They're going to give you more.
Truthfully, there's a lot of rumors saying that they're going to bundle PlayStation Now and PlayStation Plus together, and I hope they do, because I mean, if they're going to compete in the next generation, yes, their hardware is a little bit more next gen than maybe the Xbox is in terms of features, but in terms of services that they provide, they're lacking.
I mean, if you are budgeted and you don't have a top of the line TV anyway, because you just don't have a lot of money, you can get the S series for $300 and then get Xbox Game Pass, a next gen game. That's all you have to do. You don't have to pay out the $70 per game. You don't have to pay out $500 for the console. And I think that might be what the whole point of the Series S to begin with.
Yeah. All right, Alex, you got yourself a geek out?
Yeah. You know, I mentioned it at the start of the episode, but Star Trek Discovery. They just finished their third season, and I'm sad that it's over, but it is a show that just keeps getting better. Like, it really had a rocky start. Like, the first, like, two or three episodes of the first season were really hard to get through. But every season is better than the last. And this one has proven that once again. I really like all of the references and stuff that they pull from the original Star Trek, the original series, not trilogy. they pull a lot of stuff in a way that isn't cringy, because a lot of times when they do that, or when any show does that, it's just a cameo, or it's just a remember this thing or something. No, they go to some of the planets that they went to in the original series. The characters portrayed by a different actor show up in an important way that isn't just a cameo. A lot of the events that took place are referenced in the show. So I really like the call outs to the original show. I like everything about it. It rocks.
It does.
The thing is, it's on CBS All Access, and nobody is watching it, or I feel like fewer people are watching it than should be. If this thing was on a platform that more people had and cared about, I think it would be way more popular than it is. This thing would be talked about all over the place, but it's relegated to CBS All Access, and damn you,
Paramount's gonna try to fix that though.
I hope so.
What I don't understand is, like, CBS especially, but a lot, some of the other ones as well, some of the other networks, they're exclusively launching these things on their streaming services to try to drum up business for their streaming service. And, like, I understand why they're doing it, but when I can't watch The Stand and I have CBS on cable, why aren't they releasing it on cable too? That I don't understand.
On there.
Huh?
They're going to put all the CSIs on there, I assume.
I don't understand it.
Well, like, if they want you to stream, even if it's temporary, like, I'll get it long enough to watch Star Trek and turn it back off. But they still made money. But since they released Star Trek Weekly, they still made like 3 months of sub off of me.
Right.
So they still got money off of me.
Same with me and Disney Plus. Mandalorian's over. But then they're releasing like a dozen different Star Wars shows.
WandaVision's pretty good too. So.
Yeah, WandaVision's not bad. I watched the first two episodes. Still don't know. I still don't know. I mean, it's interesting, but I don't know how. I don't know where they're going with it. But I kind of like that.
I don't think.
I kind of like that. I don't know where they're going with it.
But CBS and Paramount are going to try to fix that problem. They are going to get rid of CBS All Access and create Paramount Plus and bring more of Paramount into it, and
not just CBS.
Yeah, it's not going to be just CBS. They're going to bring more of Paramount into it with CBS, and keep it at the same price. That might work out a lot better.
I would love to hear that more people have access to Star Trek Discovery, because it's an awesome show and I love it.
It is.
If that's a Viacom owned, they could probably fold in a lot of Nickelodeon and all that stuff.
They are putting Nickelodeon on it, because Viacom, yeah. CBS owns it, and they own other platforms, and they own Paramount. So they're sucking in a lot of Nickelodeon. I think they were getting BET into it. Comedy Central. They were going to pull in Comedy Central into it.
If they're able to do that, then that'll make me really happy, because YouTube TV, Viacom has an agreement with YouTube TV where they have Nickelodeon stuff now. They have BET. They have a lot of those other networks. So CBS All Access stuff might actually filter over to YouTube TV. Because when I say... when I say I have cable, I have YouTube TV. I'm probably like the only person that has YouTube TV, but I like how it has unlimited free DVR, and then it has, you know, you can watch your live stuff. So anyway, I guess I'll do my geek out now.
I thought you did.
No, I didn't. I'm geeking out the whole time, you know. I got
that's true.
The whole show.
I think yours was PlayStation Now.
No, he was talking about the Xbox thing. So
I thought it was a nice segue.
No, it wasn't a segue. It wasn't a segue. my geek out is actually you've seen these Chinese handheld retro gaming systems. I had the Pocket Go, and I got it like 2 years ago, and it was cool. It was really cool, but it was clunky, and it was Linux based, and there was a lot of stuff, you know, a lot of configuring and everything about it. I just ordered one. It hasn't come yet. But and it's not probably not going to come for another 2 months, because it's coming from China. I am really, really excited for my Retroid Pocket Go. It's a pocket system that runs completely on the Android platform. So it has access to the Play Store. It's got Android 6.0 on it. It'll play... Nintendo 64 and PlayStation Pocket and Nintendo DS. And even up to Dreamcast. But it'll also play
Play Store games that have controller support. So,
That's pretty cool.
A bunch of the Grand Theft Auto games, I can just download it straight from the Play Store. And a lot of those games I have already on my account because I used to have an Android phone and I bought a whole crap load of games. But also,
It's Android, will you be able to play your PlayStation over it?
Well, you have to have an actual PlayStation 4 controller paired. It reads as a PlayStation 3 controller, the Retroid. What's kind of cool, though, so I know where you're going. I know where you're going, Greg. The thing that's really cool, though, is it has Steam Link.
Oh, okay.
So I can conceivably play Fallout 76 or Cyberpunk on this little handheld from the comfort of my own couch.
I'm wondering if it would play the Xbox too, because the Xbox just has to have controller support with compatible buttons. It doesn't have to be an Xbox controller. The one I bought is just an Xbox Bluetooth controller specifically for that purpose.
Well, I mean, it would be worth for me to do like a month trial and try to figure it out, see if it works, because that would be really cool.
Yeah.
I mean, it's gotten to the point where, you know, games of as a service has become the new Netflix. I'm really trying to find out where
who's going to win. I think it's going to be up in the air.
I know Stadia's thrown their hat in the ring. Oh, I could probably run Stadia off that thing too.
You might be able to. My problem with Stadia is the requirements are not there for so much of the world's internet to run that properly. It takes such a big internet connection to run that properly for some reason. And a lot of people just don't have it, because I've seen multiple reviews where the people were reviewing it were professionals and went and got like 200 meg down connections to test it on, and it still ran not so great.
Mm.
So that makes me iffy about it. Of course, I'm waiting to see how, you know, Amazon is a king of hosting web services. And they're making theirs. They're making their Stadia equivalent right now. It's in beta. So
me and Alex's buddy Brian trying out Luna the other day. Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah. But the other thing that's really cool about this little, the Retroid Pocket 2 is, so it's got two analog stick. It's really got all the buttons except for the L3 and R3 that you would have on really any next gen like controller. But it also has Bluetooth, so you can connect up another controller to it and play two-player games, and it has Wi-Fi, so you can download ROM straight from the internet, straight to the device without hooking it up to your computer. But the thing that's really cool about it is it has an HDMI out.
Oh, that is nice.
It's kind of like taking the idea of the Switch and stripping out some features, cutting down the screen size and everything. It's like miniaturizing the Switch down to something that, you know, is approachable by a lot of people. I hear it takes a lot of tinkering, but I'm a tinkerer, so.
And you said it runs PSP?
It runs PSP.
You should find out how Crisis Core runs.
Oh man, I played that this summer. I actually built a pocket system, and the Retroid Pocket goes faster. It'll run more stuff. But I played Crisis Core this summer. Man, that's a fantastic game. I wish more people played it.
Did you see where Square Enix just copyrighted other names with Core in it that they think are connected? And First Soldier, which sounds very much like a Sephiroth story.
Yeah, I'm kind of hoping that the next Final Fantasy VII installment has DLC that is Crisis Core, that is pre-Crisis Core, that's Seth Roth.
That would be really nice if they have like a DLC model. I was hoping that for seven, but they were just kind of setting up the universe for this.
I just looked at the time. Mike, you're getting hungry, I think.
Mike, you're also muted.
I'm hungry.
You're hungry.
And I'm the one cooking tonight.
Okay.
Everybody else is probably hungry too.
Yeah. So anyway, this has been RGCWV, Random Geek Culture in West Virginia. I am your host, Luke Hersey. With me tonight was Mike Mallow.
Bye.
And Greg Phillips. And Alex Bye. McLean. And thank you for hanging on with us, though I don't know if anybody has actually watched the Twitch stream.
but I'll be trying to publish this audio very soon. And if you like what you hear.
If it took.
What?
If it took.
What? Yeah, if it took. Yeah, thank you for hanging on to us with all these technical problems. Hopefully this will go easier next month, because we're planning on doing these monthly as a retrospective of what's been happening. And hopefully we'll be a little bit more refined on our system. So anyway, thank you for listening to RGCWV, Random Geek Culture in West Virginia. Welcome to the end.